listening to the AI in Motion podcast with JP Morgenthal. Hi, everyone. I'm JP Morgenthal. I'm the host of AI in Motion, the podcast about everything AI in supply chain and manufacturing. And today I have a guest with me, Robert Jolliffe. Robert holds a Bachelor of Engineering from the University of Toronto and began his career as a production engineer in the early 1990s before transitioning to IT management in 1994. He's consulted with over 200 small manufacturing customers, specializing in Infor ERP and Microsoft Dynamics implementations. He is currently the owner of Sabre Limited, a Dynamics 365 Business Central partner exclusively focused on serving the small and mid-market manufacturing sector. And a fun fact about Robert, he's an obsessive music collector who has acquired 490 of the 500 albums from Rolling Stone's 2013 Top 500 album list and claims that the remaining 10 are out of print. Robert, thank you for joining.
I claim that they're out of print. They are out of print, JP. Just, don't give me a hard time.
It was
time.
A fun fact. I had to make it fun.
And I am a Gen X, so I collected them on CD.
Oh,
and for those okay. of you who are too young and you don't know what a CD is, it's a thing you put in a.
I was curious if it was vinyl. I was going to say
that. I have some vinyl. Yeah, I have about 150 vinyl albums, but I don't have. I haven't been collecting them as vinyl. That's the 20. I got the 2003 version of the book. And then it was updated in 2013. So I've updated my list. And then it was updated again in 2020. But man, it's like, I got to buy another 180 or so CDs. And you can't buy CDs. Right? They're all, it's all online now.
Yeah, you got it. So, yeah, you can buy the albums or download them, right?
Actually, it's easier to get vinyl sometimes now for some of the new stuff.
They are. So yeah. It's an interesting, you reached out. You had listened to one of my earlier podcast episodes.
Yeah, I think two episodes ago. Yep.
And you had an intelligent comment that you had sent to me and said, I don't agree with, necessarily what this particular person said. And I said, okay, well, I like intelligent dialogue. This is good, right? And it's one of the reasons I like to do the podcast is to, raise awareness, but also to get people thinking, and even more importantly, to share ideas. So I should have reminded you in advance, but do you remember exactly what it was that you had taken, that you disagreed with and what your point was?
I just re-listened to the podcast before, like earlier today. It's episode 5. It is Why ERP Failed and AI Will Succeed. And the thing that I took exception to was that ERP failed, because I don't agree with that. I could see that SAP fails quite often. I could agree with that, but I don't play in the SAP space or the Oracle space. I play down in the smaller sandbox, and I'm dealing with clients for which without ERP, they are at a economic and competitive disadvantage over their competitors. And they are desperate to get ERP systems, and the ERP systems make massive improvements for them, because they are generally, when I'm running into these clients, they're often on QuickBooks and Excel spreadsheets. And that's how they're running the business.
So question then, is it a matter of scale? Do we think that ERP is, let's face it, it's a complex interrelation of data and processes. That's really what ERP comes down to. Is it perhaps just works better because the scale is smaller and as a function, it's easier to put together and make these processes and make this data more manageable and interoperate than doing it for a 50 billion or $100 billion corporation with across multiple countries and with thousands of customers, because you're operating at a much smaller scale, right?
Yeah, I'm my customers are $10 million in revenue and up, so I might have a customer that's approaching $500 million. in revenue, but I don't play in that sandbox with the Fortune 500. But I would argue ERP really, it distills down to being a database. That's what it really distills down to being. It's a database. It's a single integrated database that has your business functions within it. And then layered on top of that, of course, are the data entry screens and reports and modules that hold that data and interact with it. And when you're dealing with a business, no matter what size it is, well, not no matter what size, I mean, if you're three people in a factory, you could do that on the back of a paper napkin, as a lot of clients like to tell me when they get annoyed that they're asked to put ERP systems in and put processes in place. And they're like, I used to run the business on the back of napkin. And I'd look at, you know, Tony, you ran it on the back of napkin. It was you and three other people. And you had a couple of CNC machines and you were taking orders from Ingersoll Rand or somebody and doing some specialty parts. You have 75 million dollar plus CNC lathes and mills. You have a two-story horizontal boring mill. You have 150 employees. You do $75 million of revenue and you're dealing with these Fortune 500 clients that you're making parts for. You can't run that on a back of a napkin. Like, I don't care how smart you are. You can't run that on the back of a napkin anymore. And you need something to run it. And ERP is what it is. And I think, like, if we go back to the origins of ERP, because you guys talked about it a little bit, but I think it goes back further than you're recognizing. Like, you guys were talking about some of the big consulting firms. ERP originated as MRP and accounting software, and they were two separate products, and IBM sold both of them. And we're talking about like late 60s, early 70s. And one of the earliest adopters of real MRP solutions before ERP, ERP is a term that just basically
it was mid 80s when we first started.
Mid 80s was when the term came out.
Jan Bahn, actually.
Bahn was one of the early players in that. But the term was invented because what was happening was in the late 60s, early 70s, software had started to permeate into industry. And there was an accounting software packages that were being released so the accountants could do their relatively complex accounting in a computerized way. And then the people in the supply chain, and if you're a Gold Rat fan, he has a great, and I think you are, there's a great book on tape, you know, like audio lecture series by Gold Rat, where it's actually him lecturing people. And he does this story and he talks about how, if you walked into the late 1960s, early 1970s into a factory of any consequence. And my dad, by the way, was the plant manager at an American Biltrate factory in Quebec with 5,000 employees, I think. And he was the plant manager and he had the team that did this. So I would talk to him when he was older and I was getting into this and I'd heard the story and he would go, yeah. And he was early with IBM bringing in technology to try and replace this. So what they did was they had little cards that were like the library cards that we would get for the Dewey Decimal System when we were kids and we went to the library. By the way, kids, if you're watching, in the old days, we read the books. They were real books. And they were on shelves. And we had to go into this card catalog thing to look up the book we wanted. And we pulled it out. And it said it's on shelf, you know, 901.2. And you'd have to go look for that book and pull the book. And these cards...
But we are digital, and digital is definitely a prevalent part of society. But libraries still exist.
Do they? Okay, that's
libraries
great.
Libraries still exist.
I wasn't sure.
Absolutely.
I don't get out of the house much.
You do. So, you don't go to the card catalog anymore. You go to the computer and look it up.
Right.
But it still gives you a shelf that you got to walk to.
But for those of us who remember those cards, right, the way my grandfather did this too, because the way bills of material were created was there was a pack of cards, literally a pack of cards. And on the pack of cards, it would say how much of each item and what safety stock level and replenishment, et cetera, was on a card that got put in a little bundle. That was your bill of materials. And then there was a card somewhere with your finished good item. And what they would do is they had these big books and they would write in the orders from their customers in these ledger books. And once a month, a group of 20 people for this factory would get together and they would calculate a materials requirements. and they would run through the material requirements calculations on calculators by hand, and they would add it all up, and they would generate their purchase orders and production orders for the next month, and they would release it, and it took 3 weeks. And at the end of the 3 weeks, they tidy everything up, put all the bills and material bundles back into their little piles, and then they would start on the next month, and they would do the next thing. And Black & Decker brought in MRP. They had IBM develop the technology that duplicated this function that these humans were doing in a room, calculating out, and they eliminated the 20 or 30 material planners that existed in that business.
Sounds like AI automation.
It does a little, doesn't it? Isn't it? Everything goes around, comes around. And what Black & Decker did was they cut their, I believe the story is that they cut their inventory work in process by 60, 70%. They increased their on-time delivery from 60% or 40% or whatever it was to about 95%. And they were able to increase their productivity and efficiency by another like 50% or 70% improvement. It was huge, just massive. So everybody ran out and started buying MRP systems in the late 70s, early 80s, because Black & Decker and a couple other companies, I think Hewlett Packard might have been one of the early adopters, and they had the same results. These companies had these great results, and these other companies bought MRP systems and eventually ERP and didn't see the same results. And one of the things Goldratt says in the story is he says Black & Decker went to running a net materials plan, an MRP, running MRP and generating a net materials requirements plan every week. Okay. And everybody else bought this technology and replaced all the 25 people in the room.
But did it every month.
And ran it every month because that's what they'd always done for 100 years. They'd run it every month. And so, or 200 years or however long we'd been doing this manual process. And so they just did it. And they were like, why aren't we getting any improvements? Yeah, okay, we have less people in the material supply chain team, but we have just as many late shipments and just as much work in process, and our inventory is just as out of control as it was before, whereas Black & Decker had these improvements. And Goldratt writes tells the story, and he also writes in a book a couple books he's written about the subject, because he's written a lot of books. I got a bunch of books back there.
So if you go to every week from an every month, you're getting a flow. Right. Your flow is changing, which is big around. I mean, that is Goldratt in a nutshell, right?
No, that's actually lean. That's actually just in time, right? Like, it's also the just in time concept. You're running your analysis more frequently, which allows you to order smaller batches, which allows you to make plans for smaller production runs because you're getting the data more accurately and more in real time, right? And eventually they all caught up and everybody realized this was what was happening. First of all, I think the same thing's gonna happen with AI. You're going to have people who are going to try and impose AI technologies and functionalities, but then do things the way they did them before, and it won't really end up with any improvement. I mean, there's that, I don't know how accurate or how much you believe in it, but the MIT study that showed that 95% of enterprise AI projects are now producing zero results. And this
I've actually looked at some of the sightings that are coming out with regard to failure, and the issue I think is really more to do with poor expectations, incorrect assumptions.
Yeah, going in. I agree with that. Yeah,
yeah.
That does everything. So, it does a so person's job.
I have a client. Literally not a programmer. Never. I mean, they years ago. They've been in the tech world, but they're now an executive in the tech world. And years ago, they set up Linux workstation or Unix workstations. That was their experience, right? And they haven't touched it since. And I've been working with him on using Claude to take some of his concepts, because he's gone and he's done like management level consulting and come up with all these massive, you know, methodologies on the way to operate companies. And he's written books and he has all these materials. And so I was helping him to take that and create SaaS applications to support this. And I literally within the span of 4 days, he had three applications based on his three methodologies ready to go and working locally on his machine using Claude. And to me, that is, you know, I mean, we took somebody who doesn't have the skills and in a very short time made them able to take their subject matter expertise, their knowledge. This goes back to like expert systems, in my opinion. I was able to take the expert and capture the expert's knowledge into a system. Now, does that the thing that should go, you know, and be deployed as a production application? No, but it's who else is going to do that? You're not going to find to get a programmer or a team of developers to that point where they understand enough of what's in that person's head to build it, right? So if you think about it, if you take a project and you think about it in terms of getting from A to Z, okay, and you're telling me that they're failing, I'm telling you they're most likely failing because they're taking the old software development approach. Or I'm going to have an analyst capture requirements and try waterfall, not even agile, and it doesn't work. That model doesn't apply here. This is more about go right to the source, capture it from the horse's mouth. Supply chain. I was writing something earlier today, right? You know, it's funny. The AI recommended to me that, you know, you should capture the process in BPMN. And I'm like, no, no. Nobody's sitting down at BPN designing, because if you're doing that, you're doing the wrong thing. I said, yeah, design what it should be. Have a vision. Know how you want the business to work. And then go use the modern technology to capture what's really happening on the floor. Wearing cameras, interviewing people, you know, having IoT and sensors. And then take those three pieces of information and determine whether it's A, the vision isn't being met because people just never bothered to optimize what they're doing. It's like, this is the way we've always done it. Or the vision is wrong because the floor doesn't, they didn't know about what really happens, what it's like out here in the real world day to day, right? So that just, you know, I wanted to create that framework for you to then jump in and say, you know, how, because you've been studying AI also on your own. You've been getting into it.
Yeah. Not like you. I mean, I think you're like, you know, I'm in preschool and you're in university when it comes to AI. But let me. I want to touch on a couple of things you just said, because you hit a couple buttons for me that I want to talk about. So the first one is base effect. The base effect is, if you want to improve something, but it's already very improved, you're going to get a diminishing return on your investment of effort and time and money in making that improvement. And I think that's where you were saying, what's the difference between the very small business that's implementing ERP? Is it simpler? Is it easier? Yeah, it is. But the base effect is much lower, right? They don't have a system in place. They don't have a structure. So when you impose an ERP into that environment, that's their first proper structured business process best practices, and they have nothing, even though they are refactoring, if you will, the business processes to what the ERP comes out of the box. That's a big improvement, and it takes them from, you know, the Stone Age to the 20th century. Okay,
Let me jump in.
Okay, second thing is, what I think happens in larger ERP projects is that the ability, like in a small, I'm doing small ERP projects, so it's as an ERP is a web of interconnected functionality, but I can wrap my head around that entire web. I can have one person, myself, a couple other people within the organization, we know enough about how our ERP works that we can wrap our hands around the whole thing. Mostly, right? 99% of it, we're there and we understand it. So we're one brain that's able to look at the business processes that the customer is trying to do and say, in the ERP, if you do this and that, you will create a conflict. If you do this and this other thing, you won't. That, therefore, is the way to do it. when you get into these bigger ERPs, you go down into the departments, and the business analysts go in each department. And Goldratt talks about this. I'm going to go back to Goldratt a lot because he's my hero.
He's awesome. And I love him.
He's great. He's fantastic. He talks about how that department will try and optimize their own processes, but they don't see the big picture. And when they do that sub-optimization, I think he calls it that. I call it that too. That sub-optimization within that department, they can break communication chains that go to other departments. They can break business processes by improving them individually. Right. They break others. So let me give you an example that I ran into many years ago.
Is that Conway's law?
I don't know, actually. I don't know the law. That's great. You've given me something to go research.
We talk about Conway's law a lot later. With regard to DevOps. And I know that Willis brought a lot of lean and into the DevOps universe, right? A few people did, but they took a lot from the lean and Goldratt and others, Deming, for DevOps. And so I was just curious. Conway's law.
I could have gone into dev. Okay. I could code in Pascal and Object Pascal and Borland Delphi, if you know that programming language, C# and VB.NET and VB6. I wrote lots of code.
I think of all of them, you can still do C#, C++.
Yeah. Delphi doesn't really exist anymore. There's an open source .NET Pascal that is derived from Delphi. The sub-optimization you get in software development too, where you get too large of a piece of software. There's a team over here that's trying to improve something. They don't really realize that it's interacting with this other part. And then you get bugs, right? Now the bugs, they expose themselves very cleanly in software development when you have a consult, like you're developing a commercialized product, right? And you've got quality teams and everything, and they're catching it. The bugs in an ERP implementation only appear after you've got it running, right? Or you've done really thorough user acceptance testing and very, very good piloting, which nobody does because they get sick of doing it because they keep running into problems. And then you get this exhaustion from it. And somebody upon high says, you must go live in August or else. Your bonuses, and the CFO is going to get fired, and the CIO is going to get fired. They're all like, okay, put it live. And they haven't tested it thoroughly enough. And all these suboptimal, these departmental optimizations that departments are trying to do to self-optimize have now broken the entire chain of system. And as it gets bigger, because it's harder to wrap your head around, and because you're going from something that worked, it didn't work great, it had problems, but it worked. You had a base.
Right.
And now you're trying to go up to the next level. You're actually not going to get the massive improvement you got when you went from spreadsheets and QuickBooks 35 years ago or whatever it was when you started to your first ERP. You're not going to get that jump ever again. Like, that is the best you're ever going to do.
I can see that.
I'm going to argue that AI has a risk, and I'm not a negative against AI. Like, I think AI is, as you said earlier, MRP replaced a bunch of people. I think bank tellers got replaced by automated telling machines. There are more bank tellers in banks now than there were before because people want to talk to a person, and B, the bank tellers all sell you insurance and 401ks, RRSPs, whatever you want to call them, mutual funds, and they've changed the business. They've repurposed the humans to sell more stuff and make more money, which is great. I love that. I'm a capitalist, and I think that's the way to go. And I think AI is going to head the same way. I think we're going to have these experiences of AI coming in. But I am a little bit worried about AI sub-optimizing faster, and that somebody could go into a department and say, how can I optimize your processes? Mm. And we're going to create an AI that does this. Oh, way, fantastic. We got an AI that does this stuff. And then other departments now don't know that AI got implemented, and the AI is doing stuff that's breaking stuff in other departments faster and with more aggressively. And that may be why the failure happens. I have not read the citations. I have not dug into it. Now, interesting factoid, small business AI projects are highly successful. And I think it's because they are more likely to take agents that are off the shelf that have been quality controlled and tested and created by a different organization. And they're bringing those AI agents into their organization, and they're, because they don't have the bandwidth and the consulting resources and the business analysts and even the SMEs, the subject matter experts, don't have time to spend on it. So let's get something off the shelf. Because again, the baseline effect, right? They're starting with nothing. So let's just get something paid that's available. And that, from what I've been hearing in the SMB space, is very successful because they use them. They're adopting them.
Yeah, it makes, I stated, or we addressed the same point. And it's a good point, which is most of the people, especially at small and mid-sized business, are most likely going to adopt AI through the products and technologies that they purchase. They're not going to be, you know, the type of businesses that are going to be building their own models. They just, unless they see something that is truly market differentiating IP, hey, you know, if I do this, it's going to, you know, change the way I, you know, can build this product and allow me to charge way less than all my competitors, then it becomes intellectual property. Then it's worth investing. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's, as you said, just take it off the shelf.
I think something like visual, like digital visual inspection of product, which has been around for a while.
Yes, it has.
Right. It's not like large language models will help with that probably in various ways, but it's not something new. That's been in manufacturing for a while. Robotic assembly lines where the robots can sort of mitigate and remediate problems that are happening have been around a while. AI will make it better. I think in the manufacturing process or you know, automated logistics and supply chain tools, like a truck that drives itself between your two locations and does a delivery so you don't need a human and you can have parts going back and forth, like whatever it happens to be that you're putting AI in for physical world, for the physical interaction with the physical world, I could see a few areas where there will be companies that come to market with something. And then manufacturers just jump in, and they once one uses it and starts getting an advantage, all the rest will. I'm talking more about the back office. I'm talking more about the less tangible stuff in the supply chain, where I'm communicating to my suppliers I need parts, where I'm collecting from my shop floor usage data and information, or I'm trying to optimize. Like one of the things I'm one of the reasons I listened to your podcast was I was supposed to do a webinar or a presentation on AI.
You had mentioned that. Yes. You got invited to speak.
Yeah. And I was just in a room with a bunch of people from who are Microsoft users and resellers. And I was doing this event in Montreal. And I thought, well, I don't know if I know enough. And your first podcast where you talked about tokens and explained how they worked was fantastic. I mean, it gave me enough primer that I went, okay, now I got a baseline and I can start looking into it. One of the things, and I can't remember, I think it was episode 4, you guys started talking about approvals. And you were talking about it in terms of contract negotiation and how the supply chain team and
that was the asset management.
It was after the asset management. Oh. It was I think it was your third or fourth podcast, and I realized my customers are too small to do contracts. They're the ones who are signing the contracts, not the ones who are creating the contracts. Right? They are not. They don't have that level of compliance capabilities internally because their procurement department is Joe. They don't
have the leverage, I guess.
Joe and Sue. Yeah, they don't have the leverage. And Joe and Sue are the procurement department.
Right.
Right. That's it. That's the whole procurement department. But the boss wants to approve purchase orders that exceed, or maybe he's willing to let, I'm saying he, being sexist, but it could be she. I have a lot of bosses that are she's, and they also want to control this. But they might let the CFO do the approval, or the COO if they have one, or VP of operations or whatever they call that role, they might let them do the approval, but then the CEO actually wants to do approvals for purchase orders over a certain amount because the company's only making
small businesses.
Everybody's wearing more than one hat, right? Like everybody's got five hats on, even the CEO. Well, they're not approving any purchase orders under 10,000 because it's not worth it. It doesn't make sense, but they should. They should. Somebody should do a double check and see if that PO, you know, is for a product that's obsolete and it's an accident that a purchase order or something came in for it. It's not, it shouldn't be replenished back up to the safety stock level that it was originally set to, or the product's being obsoleted in the next engineering release, but nobody's gone and changed the stock levels and the inventory replenishment rules or whatever it happens to be. There's lots of reasons. And it could be that it's just a $500 purchase order, but you multiply that times 1,000 a year and you get $500,000 of these little tiny purchase orders that really you could be checking on and validating. And I thought, man, that is an AI use that would be great.
Validation is definitely something that can do very easy.
And you're not removing a body. Adding a feature.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
You're not saying
because nobody's doing it now anyway.
Because nobody does it.
It's like watching packets for security on the network. It's not like a person's doing that. Nobody would be doing that if we didn't have the technology. But hey, we got the technology, so let's watch.
Right.
Let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back. And we're back.
Okay.
So when we left, you were actually making some really interesting points. I liked, you know, about, you know, why do we need to look immediately at labor replacement? There's so much validation, checking, confirmation type activities that isn't being done that directly relates to expense management, profitability that, you know, could easily be looked into, could be taken advantage of. I think even a process as simple as looking at, you know, net number of days you're paying, right? And then you say that you don't have leverage, you know, the smaller organizations don't have the leverage, but you can negotiate, you know, hey, you know, if AI told you that you would be better off, you know, you'd have more opportunity to float some of your money if you did net 70 instead of net 90. You might try to negotiate net 70 with your clients. It's non-traditional, sure. But sure. It's not, 90 was picked when nobody knew anything because we didn't really do those calculations. Now we have this super brain that's sitting there looking at what's the optimal number of net pay for my business? Yeah. It's 70. Okay. So, you know, how many vendors are going to go, no, only 90. I only want 90. Get off my lawn. Yeah. And it's like, all right, it's a 20 days. I can do that with you, right? You're a good consumer or customer of mine. Yes, I will. You know, I'll give you net 70 to pay. So those are just, I agree. I like the idea. I think to your point earlier, I think they're not going to find those tools widely available on the open market to do that for them. I think this is an area where AI is going to have, you're going to need some staff, whether fractional or full-time, right, to come in and build that for you, build that into your application. Now, you know, you're a dynamic shop. Microsoft is gung-ho AI.
Yeah, right? A little.
I'm sure
if it currently is a Microsoft product, they're adding AI to the front of it. Like, it's going to be AI Word and AI Excel and AI Outlook, because every single program, every single thing they do now, all of their internal document, it's all AI something now. It's crazy.
So shortly, an implementation that you do might have a chat interface that the user could actually type a prompt to go verify, or at a minimum, they're probably going to have one of these MCP interfaces built that allow you to plug into all that data that you have in Dynamics into an LLM, make it available as a tool to the LLM. So somebody could go into Claude and say, hey, I'd like you to review my invoices for the past 6 months and tell me, you know, is there an optimal number of net payment days that I should be using based upon that data?
Yeah. That's a really specific case, but let me give you a couple pieces of information about where Microsoft and the smaller ERPs are going. And I would assume all the small ERPs are doing this, but I'm a Microsoft guy, so I know Microsoft. So for those who don't know, who are listening, there are two ERP systems at Microsoft. There's finance and supply chain, which used to be called AX, which used to be called, actually used to be called finance and operations. And then it, before that, it was just finance or enterprise. And then before that, it was AX. And before that, it was Xapta. It's gone through a whole bunch of names, but it's finance and supply chain. It's, I'm going to say, small, mid-size Oracle ERP targets, very small legitimate SAP targets. Although I've run into companies that do like $700 million of revenue and bought SAP R3, which would be SAP HANA today, and blew their brains out, had no idea what they were getting into. Just somebody heard that's the best. And so they went and they bought it. And it would be like, I need to be able to go to the corner store and pick up milk. So I'm going to buy a tour bus.
Yeah.
And I want the tour bus to have a kitchen and to have a disco ball and a dance floor. And I need it for milk, right? You need your minivan or your SUV or maybe a bicycle, like, but you don't need the tour bus, and SAP is the tour bus, right?
We've seen, I mean, I think a lot of SAP's earliest customers, as well as PeopleSoft's, were customers who didn't know better, who bought into the, this is the prevailing wind that you don't get fired if you buy these, but by the same token, you know, you may not get your hand slapped because you did what everybody else did, except now you're out $2.5, $3, $5 million on the implementation. Right?
That's right. Like, you bought a jumbo jet, you needed a kite or a, you know, an ultralight, but. Right. So using my tour bus analogy as SAP, you know those Sprinter vans you could get, and they've been renovated to make them into camper vans, and they're really nice and high quality. That's your Microsoft Dynamics 365 finance and supply chain. It's really nice. It's not quite as good as the tour bus, but it's much nicer than like RAV4, which is what I would call Business Central. So Business Central is great for getting around, small family, like five of you in the car, go do your grocery shopping and stuff, but you're not, you know, and if you camp, you got to put one of those tent things on the back that you put on your SUV.
Do you do implementations for both?
No, I just do the Business Central product because my clients just need all they need is the SUV, right?
Or
the
RAV4, yeah.
If you want to stick to North American cars, it's like the Ford Escape. But it's really great. If that's what you need, that's the right vehicle, right? If you are going to pick up milk at the corner, or, you know, if you're going to go to Walmart or to Costco and do some shopping, you don't need the Sprinter van with the kitchen and the queen size, you know, bed that you could pull down and the outdoor canopy when you go camping. You don't need it. Why would you get a vehicle that way outgrows your needs? So anyway, okay. So I've done my analogy. I've explained the sort of the scale of these two. So the finance and supply chain product, being the higher end product, being enterprise targeted, gets all the love for the new technology. So all the new AI stuff got added to it first. But let me give you a couple of examples of what's coming into Business Central now. There's an AI agent now that's in public preview, I believe. It's not in general availability yet, but you can download it and play with it and use it. And it is I'm going to look at your PDF files that come in from your suppliers. I'm going to try and parse them into invoices, match them to your purchase order, and try and bring up the vendor invoice filled in with from the purchase order that would match this particular accounts payable invoice. Now, it doesn't. I think because Microsoft wants to leave this to third parties who spend a lot of money developing it, it doesn't do like the three-way match doesn't match and I'm going to send it as a workflow to the purchasing department to give me feedback. There are products that do that, that are also there.
Okay? A lot of them are intelligent document processors, right? RPA.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of those, right? But that Microsoft's now using GPT through Copilot, because Copilot just connects to GPT-5 in the back end. They're using Copilot and GPT to do that. The second thing that they're using now, another agent that they've released, is there's an agent that if you get a sales order, so it monitors an inbox that you set up for your sales inbox, you get a sales request, can you quote me? Do you have inventory of this? I'm looking for this part. That agent reads it, checks inventory levels, checks that particular, tries to match it to who the customer is, brings it up to a sales a customer service rep and says, hey, this is the email I got, and here's my reply to them. And it'll check inventory, it'll get back. So I need a fuse because I bought like this device from you guys last year and I need a fuse. I think based on the bill of material of the device they bought that this might be one of these three fuses. I'm going to send them this email back and say, is it fuse one, fuse two, or fuse three? The CSR just says, yes, I agree with that email. The email goes out, comes back, and the agent has a conversation with the customer, with the human interacting with the agent to make sure the agent isn't like to accept it.
Making bad recommendations, right?
Yeah. Setting out confidential drawings or something, whatever, right?
Human loop is just valid.
So the human loop in there, right? And that's Microsoft's model. They want a human in the loop. Another thing you can do currently in Business Central, and it's been in release for a while, is I can go into a sales order and I could say with prompt, can you retrieve the sales order lines from a previous sales order that matches this type of sales order, right? Can you, the last order that Acme placed, or the order Acme placed that had two chairs on it that was by Joe, and the agent will go through the old orders and try and find the one and then suggest the lines that it thinks you're talking about from the old sales order and let you put them in. You can also take an Excel file or an email that you got from somebody and shove it into this agent and say, can you create an order for this stuff? And it'll read the email and it'll try and put it in. So this is stuff that's in the core product. It's not extra. Don't have to pay extra for it. Microsoft's just embedding it into the these AI capabilities. There is an AI now to do, I'll call it pivot tables inside Business Central. You say, can you give me a report that shows me the customer sales by territory, by sales rep? And boom, and it'll come in a what looks essentially like a pivot table right inside the system. So you, and then you could save that view and that becomes your report for that purpose going forward. So that they have really begun, and I think this is happening in other AIs. I don't know NetSuite, I don't know Acumatica or other AIs that are in that, or other ERPs that are in that space very well. I'm not like paying a lot of attention.
But when you do it the first time, it's amazing, right? I mean, you just typed natural language and you got back this pivot table and graph that would have taken you 4 days.
Well, earlier. It's probably not 4 days. Probably like a half an hour for somebody who knows what they're doing.
If but you know, yeah,
figure it out.
And if all the data is available, and
but you might make 10 or 20 of these things. So if it's saving you, it's saving each person a half an hour, and they're making a whole bunch of them because they're finding it practical and useful. That's great. Now here's the problem.
But okay, the question I have is, and what I've seen is, how many people actually, like you said, if you know what you're doing, how many people know what they're doing?
Nobody. And this is the problem. But this is also the problem with the AI. The customers are, and this is an SMB problem, because in an SMB, in small, medium businesses, everybody's wearing a lot of hats. They're all busy. We are their outside ERP consultants. Like, they don't have in-house IT and ERP teams. They might have a network admin who fixes the laptops and changes the printer toner when the printer doesn't work. But they don't have a business analyst, process improvement team within the organization. So we are reaching out. We're kind of trying to push information out to these clients and say, hey, when do you have some time for us to show you what's in the new AI technologies in these small business ERPs? When do you have some time for us to show you some of the new add-on vendors that we found? We have a vendor that plugs into the Azure AI, Foundry, right? Azure AI Foundry.
Oh, yeah.
And they'll use that to analyze your financial data and be an AI CFO. And they'll give you all that stuff you were talking about. Like, what if I change my payment terms? Will that improve my cash flow?
Foundry is more about building for those people who are willing to build a model. I mean,
right.
Yeah.
This is a third-party company that's trying to create a paid solution. It's like $100-$200 a seat per month, plus the tokens that you have to buy. But it's all made for you, right? So you just plug it into the system. And that one or two people, the CEO in my example, who wears seven hats, doesn't have a real CFO, but he knows he wants to ask questions about the business. he could go into this agent and he can ask it questions and it'll start giving him analysis results, right? Like this product line is doing better, or your engineers have obsoleted these parts, but people keep buying them, go beat them. And, you know, whatever it is that needs to be done. So I think the problem in the SMB space is they're all really interested in AI. They all want to make it happen. And this is a classic. I'm sure you've heard this before. They're too busy to spend the time on the things that will make their life better so they're not so busy.
Shoemaker's children, we problem, right?
Yeah. And so the clients themselves, as we're trying to push this information out to them, the clients do not have the bandwidth to receive the information. I think that's happening in that really small SMB space. The mid-market space where you're getting into, you got an IT department with three people and there's one who's a business, like business systems analyst, you know, or maybe there's five people in that IT department. That's different, because then I can go to that business systems analyst and I can say, we're going to train you. Your responsibility is to spread it amongst the team and get some and optimize their jobs and teach them how to use it. And that's right. That's easier to do. But in that SMB space, like I said, they're going from crawling to walking with an ERP. It's a huge improvement. They are, and that huge improvement in ERP, the incremental extra improvement of some of these AI things isn't that big for them. Well, if you know what I mean. Like the basic.
It is. I actually think that this is it's not as much as going from spreadsheets and QuickBooks, but I do think it is much larger than other gains that they probably get from technological shifts.
It's much better than the incremental average upgrade.
It is.
ERPs have been given.
The ability to have natural language, to use natural language to basically, I mean, I can be a sales manager who doesn't know anything about technology and now be able to query the data of the system in a way that I understand about sales in my industry. Like if I'm doing auto sales, there are certain characteristics that matter to me as that sales manager. Like, you know, how many, you know, people walked out the door without buying, you know, these kind of, you know, details, right? How could I, if I have that information in the system before, there I would have had to have somebody for that dealership who came in and built the report, and then it would always be that report. Right now, it's like I can just talk to it. I can use the microphone and say, hey, this is what I'm interested in, and boom.
Yeah.
And if I don't like it, destroy it.
You said a really critical thing. You said, if I have that information in the system.
Yeah.
And that's where that, going back to what an ERP is, it's a database. It's a database that holds the information about all these different modules, all these different business units in your company, and you bring it together. And when you've got the QuickBooks and spreadsheets, you don't have the data anywhere. It doesn't exist in a way that you can analyze with those natural language questions that you can ask an LLM. Once you start getting the ERP in place, now you have a data repository that you could go to and you could start saying, how many sales are we making in the Midwest? Is it impacted by the steel tariffs that have been announced, or, you know, the
and I know you're, you know, just really kind of entering this, but here another thing to keep an eye on. The ERPs of the world have established the relationships between the data in a very technical way through keys. This table is related to that table through a key. They're all, these have related entities of information. Where we're headed now, that's underlying a lot of AI stuff, is the ability to create and devise graphs of data. So actually defining the semantics of the system to say that the, you know, the forecast data is based on these two other pieces of information, and here's the relationship that feeds into that forecast, right? Past missed shipments and out of stock conditions. You can actually label them on the graph, and now AI can use that graph information. It can go get that graph schema and understand that topic in the middle, that connection. And it says, forecast data, and understand how to get to forecast data, right? Which if you didn't have that, which is why I think on your scale, it works really well, because the data is much tighter. When you get to those large scale, multi-divisional, multinational companies running six versions of SAP, you lose that connection. There is, when you get above this, the country level, that's why we have products that do financial roll-up, because they can't even manage it beyond that point.
Part of the graph in those businesses is the hurricane season. Yes. And the droughts that happen in regions and the migration of humans. You start getting into, I don't know if you've ever watched Westworld season 3 or 4, where they had the super AI computer, but you start getting into this thing where in order for the AI to analyze it, it needs all data. Everything, right? And I think
I do agree. It's getting there. So for me, that's what the corpus is. That's what ChatGPT-5 and Claude Sonnet 4.5, that's what it is. That's what the corpus is. It's that. It's the super brain. It has all the data, not about you specifically,
right,
but about everything that you specifically need to understand you.
It's starting to get context, right? That's the point of what AI is. It begins to understand the context. One of the, I was talking to my developers, because my developers are old school developers. We are in the small ERP space, the customer asks for a simple, can you add a field? And the developer can do it in 15 minutes. You can almost, like, they're using Copilot to write the code that adds the field. But, you still have to log in and show it to the customer and say, hey, is this the right field? So I'm talking to the developers about it, and they're like, well, we don't really understand what this AI thing is. And I said, look, it's a tool to collect information and not have to put edge conditions around everything. You can say, how many children do you have? And in the old days, it had to be an integer field on a form. And if you didn't type it as a number, and if you typed 999, it would just accept it. Right. Now you can write an agent, if you will. It's not really an agent, but you can validate with the AI, and you just say, make sure it's a reasonable number that isn't nonsensical. And it should be, if it's very unusual, prompt the user and ask if they really meant that, et cetera. And now the person could say, I have a pair, I have two pairs, I have a couple, I have a half dozen, I have SIX6, I have whatever they type. And the AI will say, oh, I think you mean you have 6 kids, right? I have 3 pairs of kids, right? Like, I don't know, I have 3 twins, 3 sets of twins. Oh, it sounds like you have 6 children. Is that right? And for a programmer to have programmed that 5 years ago,
oh my Lord,
would have been 1,000 hours of programming to try. Well, maybe not that many, but a lot of
edge conditions
to try and catch every combination.
Every combination.
And now the AI can do that for you in like 5 minutes of code. I'm just explaining to it what you want. You don't code anything. You're just saying to it, capture this data. And by the way, it's going to be the number of children, so make sure it isn't something outrageous and not nonsensical by looking at common, family sizes and cross-check reasonability. And you tell the AI that, and you give it a source like Wikipedia family size or something page, and say, this is where you can get that data. And the thing will take care of it.
That stuff is actually in its model. Hey, Robert, I really enjoyed our time today. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us. I think it's been really useful. I think most of all, believe it or not, I bet a lot of the people who would listen to this are really going to appreciate hearing about how Microsoft is adding AI to ERP products. So thank you again. We are out of time though. Definitely if you are interested in coming back and talking more about stuff as you start to embrace or bring the AI to customers, we'd love to hear that as well.
JP, I'd love to come back. I let a couple more people have a shot to so you can interview them.
You got to get some experience out there in the field working this stuff.
Well, we have a little bit, but what I would love to do is maybe come back to you in 6 months and give you an update on where Microsoft is, because I am very plugged into that and spending a lot of time on that. If you're interested in,
absolutely. I'm sure they'd love that as well.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you. It was a pleasure.
You can send your Microsoft rep to, maybe they should sponsor the session. I'll take it.
If you're looking for ads, let me know.
Absolutely. I am. you know, doing this for fun, but it's always nice to get a amplification.
It was a pleasure, JP. Thank you very much.
All right, Robert. Have a good night. Thank you.
You too.